Hello and welcome to Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. I'm James Holloway and I'm reading my way through the Deities and Demigods supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. And as I do, I'm taking a look at the gods, heroes, monsters, and other mythological beings that I find in it, and how to use them and religion and mythology more generally in your fantasy role-playing games. In today's episode, we're taking a look at two more deities from the Indian Mythos section of Deities and Demigods. First up, we're going to look at the god of war, Ish, Kartikeya, and then we're going to look at the goddess of good fortune and wealth and a lot more than that, actually, Lakshmi. Let's start with Kartikeya. So Kartikeya is a character who features to a certain extent in the mythology of the Vedic era and then is sort of expanded a great deal subsequently. He becomes more and more important as the Vedic sources develop into what would become Hinduism. He's discussed much more concretely the later you go on. He's ambiguously mentioned in the Rig Veda. I think you could say that there's a character who could be him because Kartikeya has many names, and I apologize if I'm mispronouncing these. You will often hear him called Shanda or Murugan. Those are just two of the many names that Kartikeya is called by. So, you know, they've chosen one particular one, and it is a very common one, but he's referred to by a lot of different titles. There are a number of different myths about his birth. I was going to say he's the son of Shiva and Parvati, but actually there are many different stories, including some where his father is Agni rather than Shiva, and they all agree that he has a very special magical birth, often connected to a prophecy, and I'll mention one of those stories later on. But so yeah, Kartikeya is, and he's often depicted as youthful, again, you know, I guess as befits the idea of a warrior. He's sort of a handsome prince type. He rides on a peacock, which doesn't seem like the most warlike mount, but it combines being fancy with, so the Indian peafowl, don't think this is true of all species of peafowl. So peafowl in general are omnivores, and among the diet of the Indian peafowl is actually small snakes. So despite the fact that the peacock looks, you know, it's a bit of a ridiculous looking bird, it's beautiful, but you know, it looks a bit silly in a way. But nonetheless, it eats snakes, which is not something you would expect. And the snakes here symbolize kind of, you know, demons, or they might symbolize, you know, negative impulses, right? If we take a more philosophical interpretation of Kartikeya as representing the, you know, not just the supernatural conflict between good and evil, but the moral internal conflict between good and evil, right? Snakes are sometimes said to represent those bad desires. And we'll talk a little bit more about the peacock because it has a pretty great origin story. But for now, the key is just you wouldn't think that this beautiful bird is a snake hunter, and that's kind of Kartikeya for you. You know, he looks like a fancy lad, but he's actually a tough guy. So we've encountered a number of different types of war gods here on Patron Deities, and Kartikeya is very much of the kind of dutiful defender type of war god. Maybe not dutiful, but he's a noble defender. It's maybe a little reductive to say that he is a war god, or at least that he is only a war god. Like all deities in the Vedic and Hindu traditions, you know, he's much more varied than that. He's often referred to as a teacher. He's an embodiment of, you know, particular moral virtues. Maybe one way to put it is this. If you start thinking of somebody as the fire god, that means that you're trying to, like, map that deity onto a particular conceptual framework that nobody sat down and thought about when they invented the religion, because nobody sat down and invented the religion. That's not how religions work. So most people don't think about Kartikeya as a war god and then assign him roles based on logical extrapolations of what a war god would do, because they treat Kartikeya as a real, or at least philosophically real, individual. If you just listened to Monster Man and said, oh, that's the monster guy, like, you might be tempted to think that I spend all my time thinking about monsters, and I read books about monsters, and I watch movies about monsters, and this might be a bad example, because that's all kind of true, but you know what I mean. That if you think about this systemization as proceeding from Kartikeya rather than proceeding from some kind of separation of the pantheon into abstract concepts, it makes a lot more sense. Like I said, Kartikeya is presented in the form of a handsome youth, sometimes with one head, sometimes with six. Supposedly, again, the myth of his birth, there are many of them, but in one of them, what happens is that, I'm not sure why this is, but he's almost not born. I think someone tries to interfere with his birth, but Agni saves potential future Kartikeya and takes him to the river Ganges, and he has like a proxy mother in the form of the goddess of that river. But then he's mothered also by six goddesses who represent the Pleiades. And so his six faces are so he can look at all six of his mothers at once, I guess. You know, yet another example of Kartikeya being, you know, a special boy. Now, speaking purely from my own interpretation, this seems like what we have here is Kartikeya as embodying the aspirations of both the warrior aristocracy and the priestly classes. So he is a very polished version of what an ideal warrior is supposed to be like. He's brave and strong, but also thoughtful and spiritual and intelligent. So he demonstrates that the ambitions of these two social groups are not incompatible. In D&D terms, he seems like a paladin's paladin. So let's talk about the peacock. Having a mount is a pretty, or indeed more than one mount, is a pretty common attribute of deities in Indian religion. The word is vahana. I actually don't know how it's pronounced, but it's not uncommon. And it's sometimes translated as vehicle because it's not always the case that the mount is an animal. For example, as we're about to see, Lakshmi is often depicted seated on a lotus blossom. So his is the peacock, but the peacock was not always a peacock. He was once an asura, and his name was Surapadman. He, although he was a demon, he seems to have had a pretty good relationship with Shiva, but it was prophesied that he could only be slain by the child of Shiva. So when he got up to some bad deeds, including an attempt to occupy heaven to torture some devas who had upset him, the birth of Kartikeya sort of was arranged because Shiva didn't have that son who was supposed to go and avenge him. Kartikeya and Ganesh are brothers, I think. They're both children of Shiva and Parvati. I was going to say we'll cover it when we get to Ganesha, but he's not in here. Bafflingly. Anyway, once he was ready to go and face Surapadman, Kartikeya, you know, fought his way through Surapadman's armies of asuras, and facing the demon himself, made short work of him using the Vel, his divine spear or divine javelin, which is both a weapon and an expression of his divine power. But before Kartikeya could completely finish off Surapadman, Surapadman begged to be spared and offered to redeem himself through service to Kartikeya, if the god would only spare his life. And that is how Surapadman became the peacock. In some versions of the story, there's one I read where Kartikeya cuts Surapadman in half with the Vel, and one half of him becomes the peacock, and the other becomes a rooster. And Kartikeya is also associated with the symbol of a rooster. It kind of appears on a banner and other places as well. But, you know, this is an idea that I keep coming back to. It's something that we've seen several times. We saw it in some of the Chinese and Japanese stuff, I'm pretty sure. Or we saw it in the main series of Monster Man when we did that episode about Journey to the West, about demons or monsters who switch sides and attempt to achieve redemption. There's also, so in the comic Vimanarama, written by Grant Morrison with art by Philip Bond, of the kind of good deities that show up when the, you know, demons are unleashed upon the modern world, or I guess not that modern now, but anyway, the world of the early 2000s, one of them is a reformed demon. I don't know, that's an archetype I've always really had a soft spot for. It demonstrates a very different view of what it means to be a demon or a devil than we often see, right? That if a demon or a devil is just an expression of a philosophical concept, then it's a contradiction in terms to say that it can convert, change its mind. So this leaves their moral status more pleasingly ambiguous. The deities and demigods version of Kartikeya gives the basics. So he's a demon fighter, he's a warrior god, he rides around on a peacock, and doesn't do very much to make him distinctive. Oh, and in a note that I appended to the side of this paragraph, even though it's completely unrelated, there are some myths in which Agni is the father of Kartikeya. As we've seen in some cases, there seem to be elements of, you know, Vedic religion where Agni is sort of comparable to Indra in his role. And I wonder if the special role of Agni in the birth of Kartikeya in the story where he's the son of Shiva and Parvati is there to reconcile a story that has Kartikeya as the son of Shiva with an existing tradition in which Kartikeya was the son of Agni. Anyway, whatever. He's not really given the detail that he would need to make him compelling in Deities and Demigods, which is a shame because he's a very D&D-able deity. I love the idea of Paladins of Kartikeya in like peacock ornamented or rooster ornamented finery. Don't you? Like, Paladins have this very, perhaps more than any class except the Barbarian, they have this very predictable iconography that's based on 19th century understandings of what a crusader looked like, which are completely inaccurate, but that's neither here nor there. I'd love to see some paladins with, you know, medieval or earlier, or post-medieval. There's some beautiful post-medieval Indian armor. South Asian arms and armor may be the most, well, not the most, because, I mean, Africa. Among the many sources of wonderful fantasy illustration, whether that's for monsters or for player characters, that have not turned up in D&D as much as they should, or in fantasy gaming in general as much as they should, South Asian imagery is definitely one of them. Having said that, let's move on to Lakshmi. Lakshmi is the wife of Vishnu, and she is the goddess of kind of good things, of happiness, of good fortune and luck, and of wealth. She is one of the sort of the three major Hindu goddesses, or possibly three aspects of the same great goddess, together with Parvati and Saraswati. And as with all these other deities, she has, we can maybe think of her as having like an everyday meaning and a sort of philosophical meaning. So the everyday meaning is that she's a goddess of just what it says on the tin, of wealth, of prosperity, of good luck. So you want your family to make money, to like get good jobs, to have plenty to eat, then, you know, she's a person to call on for help. But then there's also a more kind of like abstract interpretation in which the material richness that Lakshmi offers merely symbolizes the spiritual richness that she offers. Material wealth is great, but it is really just a representation of spiritual wealth. She's spiritually bountiful. And indeed, I mean, I don't want to say that there's like a stratum of people who don't have this interpretation. What I'm saying is that these two interpretations coexist and connect to each other. In fact, I'll come back to that concept in a little bit. I have some opinions on deities of wealth. But for now, let me just mention that Lakshmi has mortal incarnations. So for example, the other half of the romantic coupling at the center of the Ramayana, Sita, is said to be a mortal aspect or incarnation of Lakshmi, just as her beloved Rama is said to be an incarnation of Lakshmi's husband, Vishnu. And in the same way, Lakshmi is sometimes considered to be a kind of like Ur-woman, that all women are, in a sense, aspects or incarnations or expressions of Lakshmi. She is, you know, if Vishnu and Lakshmi are kind of like the ideal masculine and feminine role models, then, you know, then by extension, all women are sort of expressions of this idea of Lakshmi. Her myth of origin is tied to the primordial world where devas and asuras competed to, or maybe cooperated, to get the ocean of milk that covered the world to produce Amrita, the nectar of immortality. And in order to do that, they churned the milk. And when they did so, all kinds of treasures rose to the surface, and Lakshmi was among them. So Lakshmi is a very topical deity. This is rare. But in fact, as I record this, it is the 8th of November 2021, which means that sort of Lakshmi's major festival, Diwali, was just celebrated last week. It's, of course, popular around the world, and indeed isn't celebrated only by Hindus, but lots of other people with religious traditions that have their origin in India also celebrate Diwali in some form. Diwali, of course, is the festival of lights, and it celebrates the triumph of light over darkness. And that, of course, ties into the metaphors that you might expect. So the triumph of good over evil, the triumph of knowledge over ignorance, etc., etc., of happiness over sadness. It is a celebration that lasts for 5 days, and I want to tie this now back into the idea of a goddess of both material and spiritual wealth, because I am no expert on Hinduism or Hindu religious practice. I am no expert on Diwali. This is merely my understanding of it. But my understanding is that Diwali is a time when lots of things that are material expressions of happiness happen. So gift-giving, for instance, or feasting together, or eating special foods. These are times when evidence of material prosperity is used to reinforce a sense of family and communal well-being and gratitude. But so dressing up in your best outfits, inviting guests over, sharing food, giving gifts, I mean, these are all things that are connected to the idea of material prosperity, of material wealth, right? Of having enough to share. Even if that's then tied into the idea of sharing, even when you maybe don't have enough to share. But so this is an example of a way in which a deity of wealth is not a deity of selfishness. So that wealth is expressed through the values of hospitality and generosity. And it is through those values that we can have a deity of wealth in our pantheon and not have it be something that's mercenary or ignoble, because that wealth is tied to virtue. I mean, now, obviously, look, wealth in real life is not tied to virtue, but that's my understanding of the theology. The Little Book of Hindu Deities certainly says that, you know, although Lakshmi grants wealth and can grant material things, she looks poorly on those who want those things, you know, just to, like, hoard them and feel like a big shot, or purely for their own selfish gain. Man, be a deity of wealth without being a deity of greed is actually a pretty good brief for a deity in your fantasy pantheon. Because if you look at cultures around the world, deities of wealth and material prosperity are very common. And there has been a bad tendency for people in religious traditions that regard themselves as more spiritual and less worldly or whatever to kind of look down their noses at them and go, ugh, you know, this primitive superstition. And I think they're overlooking some of the very important roles that those figures play. Around this time of year, I always think, what am I going to do for the holiday season? And honestly, a patron deities episode on Santa Claus would maybe not be a bad one. Santa Claus has certainly appeared as a character in two campaigns I've run. I'm quite a jolly old elf when it comes to the holidays. Anyway, but that's beside the point. Kartikeya and Lakshmi are a couple of real good guy patron deities, and you can absolutely imagine clerics of both as player characters. You know, one who embodies like spiritual richness and generosity and charity and, you know, all those other good things. And another who, you know, nobly defends the people and fights demons and whatever. Again, another good cleric and paladin team. Gender roles, like the very explicitly feminine identity. But for a deity who is so strongly connected to sort of ideals of womanhood, do you think it's something you have to think about a little bit? Not necessarily in a bad way, but like, it is a thing that is reasonable that people have questions about, and you gotta be prepared to answer them or assure them that they don't need to, if that makes sense. Anyway, that is about all the deities that we have time for today. In our next episode, we're going to be continuing our journey through the Indian mythos section, and I gotta say, the only thing that I think so far, I mean, okay, Kartikeya is not as detailed as he should have been, but they're making good selections. I just wish they'd make more of them. So I'm looking forward to seeing what we have coming up next on Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. Thank you for listening, and thank you very much for supporting Monster Man on Patreon.